Happy extended holiday weekend, especially those fans from United States listening. It's your 4th of July celebration. We had a lovely Canada Day weekend here. I'm joined by Justin Cuthbert because, you know what, JD's just taking those long weekends, you know, bank those holidays, and I don't blame him. I need to get into the groove that he's in. A little Friday, Monday action.
It's a veteran move.
It is a veteran move.
I think it's working out quite well for him. But, you know, if you can extend that long weekend, because it's never long enough.
No.
You do it. And I think, was he on the other side as well? Is this five in a row? Or just four in a row, I think, for JD.
Yeah.
Anyway,
if
you extend the weekends for a good portion of the summer, you're doing things correctly.
Yes. We were talking off air, it's Justin Cuthbert and Ailish this morning, about your Canada Day long weekend and if you prefer to get a Monday day off or a Friday day off. And I think we're on the consensus that a Monday day off is nice.
Yeah, I prefer the Monday.
Like, you kind of forget that it's waiting.
That Friday becomes like partial holiday.
So for us, we're done at 10 a.m. or 9 a.m.
There you go. So, I mean, I guess it doesn't apply to all radio hosts in the morning. But if that Friday turns into leads into the weekend and then you have all the Monday, then you're good. But Monday after a long weekend is still very much a Monday. So I think for that reason, the Monday is the preferred day to extend a long weekend.
Especially because Sunday always feels like it comes too quick. And then you have like errands and you're like catching up on, you know, obviously Saturday night, you probably didn't sit at home and get your work done. So Sunday hits hard when you have a million things to do and Sunday's scary. But if you have Monday in your back pocket, you almost get to enjoy your Sunday and be like a little bit lazy. So that's not the case today for us.
Yeah, I don't know
back
how
to the grind.
I don't know how the rest of the summer looks, but maybe there's a Monday.
Yeah,
in there at
you
some
know what
point.
I'm
we got a couple more long weekends.
1 week from now, next Monday's my birthday.
There
I should
go.
Take that off.
You definitely should.
But I want to share it with my listeners. I want everyone to call in and text in and say happy birthday to me.
Okay.
Selfishly, so I'm not taking it off.
You've now set the expectations.
Yeah. July 11th, everybody, you better be tuning in to the Fan Morning Show.
Not subtle at all.
Sending your love. Canada Day weekend, I had a great weekend. I got to go to the Jays Canada Day game, which they won, one of few. one of few good games for the Blue Jays this weekend. I love seeing the big flag. They actually didn't have the cursed red jerseys that day for us. And then I went to the Backstreet Boys, which was unreal. Maybe one of the best concerts I've ever been to.
So that was Friday night?
Yeah, I had a hell of a day.
Did they play again on Saturday?
Yeah, they played again on Saturday. And yes, that was the day that Drake came. And no, I didn't see him on Friday night. Everybody that was asking. And no, I'm
Does
not
that bother
bitter
you,
at all.
Yeah. You are bitter?
I might be a little bitter because, like, you see the next night, obviously, you know, people that went to one or the other and to see people get the experience of Drake coming out to close the show. I was, maybe a little bit better.
I mean, I guess. But you're there for the Backstreet Boys.
Right, but come on. How often does Drake come out in Toronto?
Did he add anything to it?
Actually, when I watched it, he just kind of like danced around and he sung the very final like notes of
the song. It was like he was not committing to the bit.
No.
He wasn't
like
full
Nick
out
Nurse came
it.
On for our Kells and like just
he hung. Was more involved,
yeah, but
was he not?
Yeah, he got like he was playing the guitar, like he got fully invested in their concert when the Raptors had won the championship and that was cool, but Drake was kind of just like there and then you know what I'm downplaying it because I would have loved
I think
to
you
see
should
him.
Downplay it. I don't think it was that impressive.
It was fine, all right. But yeah, that was really cool. You had a wedding.
And that was such an easy It's such an easy song to sing, too.
Like, the entire
like
world
Like, he should have
it.
Been singing the whole time.
But is he a singer? Like, his latest album, he kind of like...
He himself as a singer-rapper, no?
Yeah, I think...
I don't think he had
I don't think
that.
He's the most talented singer.
I think that was evident by his attempts to sing. Was it I Want It That Way?
Yeah, it was I Want It That Way.
I thought it was pretty underwhelming.
But yeah, I had a great candidate weekend. I would have loved a Monday to continue recovering, but
Monday,
here we are.
Monday would have been good for me as well because I had a wedding Saturday night. Shout out to Jesse and Sean. Beautiful wedding. Very, very fun. But it's a quick turnaround, especially morning radio.
Yeah.
I think.
Welcome.
I've been only about 24 to 30 hours since I was engaging in the wedding activities.
You look like you've recovered mostly.
Yeah, I feel pretty good. Yesterday was a day of rest, but if you had that extra Monday, it would have been more palatable for a wedding weekend, a long weekend. Are you one of the people who sort of sticks their nose up at weddings on long weekends in the summer?
Yeah, I don't know, actually. This actually, when we just thought, we're thinking about this idea, I'm going to have two long weekend weddings this summer. One, the May kicking off the summer long weekend, which I already had, and it was wonderful. And then I'm having another wedding the Labor Day weekend. So like bookending my summer, I think for me, it doesn't really matter because I don't go up to the cottage every weekend. But if I was a cottage goer, right, I think it would be a bit of a inconvenience.
No, nothing a cottage goer hates more than a wedding weekend on a long weekend.
They're
the
like,
summer.
Come on, I only get like 6 weekends to get up to Muskoka.
And like you have access every weekend to that cottage. But if it's a long weekend that is disrupted by a wedding, I think they take particular issue with. And I guess I get it. Like there's work that has to be done. You have to go and maintain and all that stuff. But the long weekend wedding does not bother me at all. I'm not cottage guy, not in the least. I'd like to go, love to go, nice don't have one. Access.
Yeah.
But, you know, those, yeah, people like, as I said, well, you know, talking at my other job and what are you doing this weekend? Going to a wedding. And they're like, oh, long weekend. Like,
yeah. It doesn't bother
I have
me that much.
No problem. Yeah. I like that extra day. It's great. But I can, I guess, get at why cottage people are a little annoyed by
it. I'm curious. Hit us up 590-590. Would you rather a Monday or a Friday long weekend? Obviously both. How your Canada Day weekend was? Did you go to the Drake Backstreet Boys concert? Yeah, rub it in my face. And does a wedding long weekend bother you?
Was the Backstreet Boys show good?
Unreal. They still have it. They got it. It was great.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's what they built is probably repeatable over time. Like it's like they before they were even, you know, reached their crescendo. Mm-hmm. Crescendo is something they probably.
It's a good word for music. It's
good for Backstreet Boys. Lots of crescendos. They were already like residency worthy.
Yeah.
Like they just.
And they played the hits. I didn't realize they had new music.
No,
they didn't. No. Yeah.
They didn't play any
There's
of their new music?
One good song called No Place. And they played that and everybody knew that one. But other than that, like, no.
That would be so disappointing as a Backstreet Boys fan if they just like played their new stuff.
You're like, I don't know. Nobody knows this.
And everyone's just, yeah.
Oh, God. So I got to see the Jays in person on one of their good games, but 5 games versus the Rays this weekend. They had the doubleheader. Today actually marks the halfway mark of the Blue Jays season when they play tonight's game, and right. They're 44-36. Not sure what you would have wanted at this point. I don't know if JD, Blake, and I made halfway mark predictions. It feels like a year ago when the season started, but they're 14 games back of the Yankees, and there's less than a game between the Red Sox and the Rays. So this last week, obviously, I think you and I set it up. You were here last week about it being probably one of the most important weeks of their season. Mm-hmm. They went 4-4.
And started 4-1.
The momentum. We were like, here we go. Standings jumps. Tough way to end this homestand. Are you happy with a 4-4, the way that they won and the way that they inevitably lost?
No, I don't think you can be happy with it. Mm-hmm. I think definitely a sour taste in your mouth after 3 straight losses to the Rays over the course of 2 days in which they give up 24 runs
in the last 2 days.
2 days, 3 games. Not great. And of course you lose any of the what you could have gained in the first mm-hmm. couple days, you've completely lost now with those 3 losses. I guess big picture, 44-36, you said, mm-hmm. like I think that's maybe a little less than we expected mm-hmm. in terms of their success in the first half of the season. But, you know, the problems are just so plainly obvious. And when Kevin Gausman goes down early in that game, damaging the depth that is already, like, clinging to life, I mean, it just underscores exactly what the issues are with this team, and that they had to thrust Casey Lawrence in and then Thomas Hatch in the second half.
Credit to Casey Lawrence for basically playing out of the blue that entire game.
He did his job. He also gave up 6 runs. Yeah. I mean, it's like how many pats on the back do you deserve for that? He did pretty well to just get up and mm-hmm. be in the game right away in a tough spot.
But that Gausman injury, like, it changed the course of the weekend.
Changed the weekend. Like, that was setting up mm-hmm. great pitching duel, a pretty big game. If you win that one, you know, you're okay with what happens in the second half of the back-to-back. But Gausman goes out and McClanahan just dominates, and they had no answer. And they have had no answer for this lack of pitching depth, even though we thought, you know, they threw money at the issue and it looked like they had more bodies and they'd be able to at least withstand something. But it just happens over and over again. Something goes wrong. Something gets exposed and the Blue Jays leave themselves without adequate pitching in big moments. And 3 games in 2 days against the Rays without proper pitching, you know, it resulted in three losses, as it probably should have.
And it's too bad, because earlier we had a great Kikuchi game, and which we didn't really predict, and we haven't talked about it since because we had Friday off. I was not confident in Kikuchi, but he held the Rays to one run on four hits, struck out eight in six innings. He went six innings, Kikuchi. First time maybe it feels like all season that he did that. And even post-game, you know, he gave a lot of credit to his team. He said, the last three or four outings, I wasn't great. I put a lot of stress on the bullpen. You know, I really owe a lot to the team for holding their own when they tried. And you see that the difference between someone just getting six innings and doing their job and not having to put that stress on the bullpen is so evident. Gausman's injury, everybody has to shuffle up. Everybody has to be put in situations that they aren't either prepared for or out of their realm. And then you have a Trent Thornton and a Casey Lawrence having to be your guys. Thomas Hatch, I don't know if we ever see him again in a Blue Jays uniform. And it was very difficult to watch, to say it nicely.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about Kevin Durant in a bit. Mm-hmm. And a move like bringing in Kevin Durant is something that knocks everyone down a rung, right? So mm-hmm. everyone else, there's a little less expectation because you're in a more advantageous spot in terms of the pecking order. But if you lose someone like Kevin Gausman in the manner that they did, everyone moves up a rung. And then all of a sudden, every single part of the chain is disadvantaged mm-hmm. in some way. And you're forcing people into situations that they shouldn't be in that moment. And leave it to the Tampa Bay Rays to take advantage. Like, that is the worst team. Mm-hmm. Not that they're world beaters by any means offensively.
To take advantage.
But it just seems like it's the worst team to be in a position like that against. They are going to take advantage, like you said, of that situation where your pitching depth is thrust under the microscope. I think that's one of the main, like, failures right now when talking about the Blue Jays is, like, remember the start of the year, or before the year, talking about all these trade scenarios, mm-hmm. Jose Ramirez, eventually Matt Chapman,
nice.
All these great things. Like, look at this farm system that can basically replenish itself, but buy you anything, currency, right? Yet they haven't had that in any way. Haven't had that or manifest itself in any way with the pitching.
Other than Gabriel Moreno, where's the pitching?
And then you trust that there are, you know, there are position players, there's people mm-hmm. waiting in the wings, but they haven't been able to have any pitchers graduate
right.
through and just give you something from the system itself. Every time they're in a position where, like, okay, we need something, they go out and get in the trade market, or they throw a lot of money at it with mm-hmm. Kikuchi and the other additions in the offseason. They just haven't had that internal development from the pitching staff, and then you see guys that do come up, and they just get shelled. Like, it's the blind spot right now for the Blue Jays, and it continues to punish them, whereas with other teams, that's one of their strengths, or that's one of the things that helps them in situations like the ones the Blue Jays found themselves in this
weekend. We
have
Jeff Blair at 7, obviously can give us way more insight into this. I feel like the last couple times we've talked to him, it's been about pitching. Mike, is this the most urgent conversation we're going to have yet about them needing to make something happen? It really feels that way, especially with the idea that Gausman, like he said that he thought he broke his leg on that comebacker. And seeing that, he went down and he was like, it looked like he was just screaming almost.
I actually didn't see it, but I was listening to Ben Wagner on The Fan while that was happening. And his description was like, oh my God,
his leg.
Yeah, this is not good at all. And of course, it's a contusion. Mm-hmm. May miss a start, but maybe.
So he's supposed to pull.
Maybe perfect after the All-Star break, which
I hope
is coming.
So. But he's supposed to throw a bullpen tomorrow to start to get back in. I think Thursday is his pitching. His chance to get back in the lineup. It doesn't seem super promising because that's the leg he pushes off, but you never know. Maybe the Blue Jays rehab team here can pull something up. But
if he missed a start, he missed a start. I mean, it thrusts the issue further under the spotlight. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't miss considerable time, I think based on the way it all went down on Saturday, I think you'd take it. But it's bad luck, right? Like mm-hmm. that's another thing. It's like, yeah, they've had these issues, many of which are self-inflicted, but the Gausman thing is bad luck. And the fact that it didn't align itself at any point, these games and these situations, that Jordan Romano didn't throw a pitch all weekend long. It's like it just didn't work out for the Blue Jays this weekend. First, there was just bad circumstance after bad circumstance. It didn't align for them correctly. And part of that is, you know, the holes that they've left themselves for themselves. But part of it is just they had an unfortunate weekend, or at least an unfortunate last three games.
And it would be nice to have in your back pocket a Nate Pearson that could be close, could be someone that you look to add into these tough situations. But there's your bad luck once again. The guy, what was it, last week, gets back into an injury situation. He's had the mono. He's had a lot of issues in terms of being healthy. That's the one guy in your farm system that you felt confident about. So bad luck seems to be part of the reason. I also wonder how much of this you can point at management, bullpen management.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an all-encompassing issue. I mean, you expect some guys to be ready. You expect a Nate Pearson to finally give you something. You expect someone to be behind Nate Pearson knocking on the door, but no one has been knocking on the door. I think that's part of the reason that they've been a little unlucky. But again, those that they've brought in, those that they've spent money in, maybe they haven't necessarily worked either. So I think it's an issue. I don't think it's like all at the feet of management. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's all at the feet of, you know, the developmental staff. But there's something not working right now. There's something that's leaving this team exposed. And as we mentioned, it cost them this weekend.
So good thing is the Blue Jays are on the road. Going to play the Athletics this 3-day on the...
And Alec Manoah will be on the bus.
Alec Manoah tonight, Kikuchi Tuesday, and Berríos Wednesday. So you got a pretty good lineup against a team that is 26-55. So you need to get two out of three at the bare minimum. Mm-hmm. Then you play the Mariners, who are 39-42, a little bit of a better team, but you're going on a road trip that you can put some wins under your belt, hopefully, and come back home before the All-Star break and hopefully bring that momentum. So something to look forward to. Hopefully the Blue Jays, we'll have a lot more of that with our guy, Jeff Blair, at 7. But the biggest thing this weekend and the biggest conversation that has been circulating in Toronto is Kevin Durant is almost favored or 1-2 to come to play for the Toronto Raptors. And that is something that I guess kind of snuck up on us a bit.
Yeah.
And now it is dominating, obviously, the news cycle. The opportunity to get someone of this magnitude doesn't come around often. You have the Kawhi Leonard example, but Kevin Durant is one of the best basketball players of all time. Mm-hmm. And he's going to potentially come to play for the Toronto Raptors. Now, there's a lot of pros and cons. There's a lot of conversation about what the package could be, who you're giving up for a Kevin Durant. Are you able to keep Scottie Barnes? That is, I guess, the main starting point here is, for me, I don't do it if you're getting rid of a Scottie Barnes. Like, that to me is a non-starter, because I think as a Raptors fan, I feel so much momentum in his future. He's the guy for the Raptors for the next X amount of years. And whether that takes some patience, I love to see the ability of him to develop as a Toronto Raptor. He just won Rookie of the Year. Like, you know, he's obviously going to be the most desirable get in this trade. But there are package opportunities that we've seen floated around that don't include him, that include OG, Gary Trent, and 4 first-round picks. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't include Scottie Barnes, we can talk. Where are you at with that?
Yeah, I'm not fully against trading Scottie Barnes, because I feel like this is a not once in a lifetime, because Kawhi Leonard was basically the same sort of scenario, although it did happen quicker, and I think they gave up less than you would, you know, expect in this sort of situation. But it would be a massive shame if you lost Barnes in a deal that doesn't yield a championship. I will say that. 100%. Like, I feel like you have the pieces in place that if you gave up on Barnes and you gave up on the future for the present, with how wide open the East could be, how there's not really any super teams in the NBA right now. I mean, we just saw a Golden State Warriors 5 years after their prime win a title. So I don't think it's like there are boogeymans in the Eastern Conference Finals and potentially NBA Finals that you should be terrified of. I think it's wide open there and it's for the taking. But I can't help think of that time when Kevin Durant first played Scottie Barnes and gushed over him after. Mm-hmm. How awesome it would be to see those two play together. How awesome it would be to see Scottie Barnes grow under sort of the tutelage of a Kevin Durant. Like, if I know I'm romanticizing that a little bit, but I actually think it would be awesome for the development of a player like Scottie Barnes to have that that opportunity to play with a world-class player like Kevin Durant and compete for a title this early in his career. Any trade package that doesn't involve Scottie Barnes, I'm pretty much all in. If it's just Scottie Barnes, then I'm interested as well. But if it's Scottie Barnes and a piece of the core and the entire draft capital that you own at this moment, like, you might be leaving yourselves so thin after the trade that you don't have a chance to compete anyway.
Yeah, you'll need to add some depth. And if you don't have draft picks, and I will say, like, draft picks in the hands of Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri are some of the best draft pick capital you can have. They have a proven history of finding diamonds in the rough, developing players. But if you're going to tell me you don't have any draft picks for the next four, like any first round draft picks for the next 4 years, that's really tough to stock your cabinets.
Yeah, I'm not as worried about the draft. I'm way more worried about Scottie Barnes.
Well, of course.
But I'm not as worried about the draft picks because if you have Durant, those are going to be late round draft picks, the first round. Mm-hmm. And this is a team that's proven capable, or management team proven capable, of finding players that are undrafted, second round picks
that can have a difference. Point.
Like
And trades.
They're only worth, they can only really hurt you if they're top 10 picks, lottery picks, picks of that nature. If it's late in the round, I feel like they can figure out a way to get late first round value out of undrafted players' second round picks. I think you can trust Bobby and Masai with that. So I'm not as worried about giving up the future draft picks for the present, because why else are we in this industry but to try and win championships? Kevin Durant gives you that opportunity. But I am worried about, like, there's no point in making a deal if it takes too much from the existing core in order to complete. So you got to figure out what exactly you can win with still with Kevin Durant added to the fold. But I think if you find a way to keep Scottie Barnes, you protect the future and you have the here and now. And that would be, despite, you know, I think Michael Grange reported Saturday that Bobby and Masai feel like the Raptors can put together the best offer. Well, the best offer includes Scottie Barnes. But maybe that's not necessary. And if that's not necessary, I see very few obstacles to the trade, because I don't think the draft picks are worth as much if you have the future in Scottie Barnes with the present in Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant's going to be 34 when this season starts.
That's a big con.
That's a big con. If he's technically at the declining end of his career. I know last season when he did play, it didn't seem that way, but he's going to be 34.
And he's a few years removed from Achilles reconstruction.
Mm-hmm. He hasn't had the best track record of being someone that plays every game and has been, I would say, sometimes questionable as like a culture fit.
Since Golden State, he's had no success.
He's never been a number one to lead a team to a championship.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't help get the Nets.
Back-to-back finals MVP, though.
But he wasn't the number one, right?
1A, 1B.
Okay. Well, you'd have to be here. He wasn't able to get the Nets out of the first round. Got swept by the Celtics with Kyrie.
It feels more like a Kyrie problem than a KD
problem. I'm just putting facts out there.
But I hear you. I hear you. I think the biggest, like, you can't do this multiple times. Like, this sort of move you have once, right?
Correct.
So is Kevin Durant worth this once, this
That's
one move that you
question.
Have? And it's funny, too, because the Raptors are like the last team to have success with a move like this. So you have seen it before. Can history repeat itself?
There's that recency bias, I think, with fans, too, that are on it. They said, well, it can just be like the Kawhi situation.
But I think that works both ways, because any other time you've seen superstars load up in different markets, like, it rarely works. What are the last few teams to win championships? Golden State, basically all homegrown.
Mm-hmm.
Boston Celtics went to the finals, homegrown. Phoenix Suns and Milwaukee Bucks the year previous, pretty much homegrown.
But that's what Masai and Bobby always preach, is they want a homegrown roster.
So do you ruin that culture if you go out and make this deal?
And I always talk about it as I love the culture of the Toronto Raptors. I think that they put a lot of emphasis on that. And I don't know, like Kawhi was a guy that I wasn't, you know, I didn't really know what he was bringing in terms of leadership and in the locker room type guy. I don't know if Kevin Durant is a boost to that or someone that doesn't move the needle at all. I know he loves Toronto. I know he loves the OVO house. He clearly like loves playing in Toronto. He's mentioned that many times, or else this wouldn't be a consideration. He's not going to go to some team that he doesn't want to live in that city. I think I just wonder about what that's like to bring a guy in of that magnitude for an organization that preaches building a championship culture within.
What do you think has been the strongest influence on the Raptors culture so far? Like what is it? Is it just the presence of Masai? Is that stronger than the fact that they won the title in 2019? I think that is what set the culture.
Yeah.
I think they uncovered so many good things, so many intangibles, so many ways of approaching the game, the sport, the industry, the business, Nick Nurse, Bobby Webster, Masai Ujiri, the core. That all added up to create what was something that could be believed in because it worked. But they don't win without Kawhi Leonard. Mm-hmm. So can you win again without making a deal to bring in someone who's going to be the one, as I mentioned, that knocks everyone down one rung on the importance ladder? I'm not really sure, but I am sure of the fact that winning does wonders for culture. And I think Kevin Durant would give them a very good chance to win. And one other thing I like, and I think that balances the fact that he's 34 years old, a little beat up. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be supremely motivated. This is a guy who's wasted prime years of his career here, has not won outside the confines of Golden State.
And he has an opportunity for his ego personally to come in and be the guy that leads this organization to a championship.
If you have a player like him walk into a championship culture, which I think the Raptors have, but they are missing what Kevin Durant provides, and the Raptors can provide what Kevin Durant has been missing in a lot of ways. For that reason, I think it's sort of a match made in heaven in a certain regard. However, there are red flags. There are things that you have to be concerned about. I think chief among them is Scottie Barnes potentially being involved. But if you have Kevin Durant and Scottie Barnes on the same team next year with the support that the Raptors can provide organizationally and with their roster, I mean, it could be as exhilarating as that 2019 run, which did so much for the Raptors culture and how they have such presence in the market across Canada in the sports world.
So it seems to be between the Raptors, the Suns, and now trickling in last night, Warriors. And they're interested. I feel like, well, you know, we heard that more than half the league obviously made calls to talk about Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. But Brooklyn wants a massive group of draft picks, a first-round draft picks, pick swaps, and they also want an all-star level player.
And that's interesting, too, because that doesn't say, like, that doesn't scream Scottie Barnes, right?
They want someone that's an all-star level player.
So now. Barnes isn't that yet.
Exactly.
And
he has the potential, certainly, to be.
Certainly the potential. And the rest was draft picks?
Massive group of draft picks, first-round picks, pick swaps.
Anything that you have in terms of draft capital on the board, if you're trying to win now, that's not an issue. And then an all-star level player. So is that Pascal Siakam?
Technically, yes.
So Siakam plus those picks is that, I guess, that package,
you're doing
right?
A good bargain. Call them up.
I mean, that's just what the reported ask is. But I think when Masai or the report suggests that Masai and Bobby believe that they have the best possible package, if you go by that definition, it's pretty obvious who's on the table. And the money would work.
And I feel like this is extremely close. Like, I actually thought when I was going to bed that I'm like, it's going to be like the 3 a.m. Yeah. Kawhi trade, which I was awake for because I was actually in Chicago, so 1 hour time difference. Mm-hmm. So when it happened, I was at a bar with a bunch of Toronto people, and we were like, Kawhi, nobody in the bar cared. Like, they're like, what? Like, this is Chicago, shut up. So I thought last night when I was going to bed, I'm like, oh my gosh, I put my like Woj bomb alerts on. Like, just make it so that is the only noise that comes from my phone. You can do that now. Like, do not disturb, but disturb me if it's a Woj tweet.
Yeah.
And I woke up this morning, I quickly went on Twitter. I'm like, all right, well, we still have the show we prepared for. But I would, you know, I would be careful to stay tuned if you want this news, because it just feels imminent.
Yeah, I mean, it was building, it seemed, all weekend with the report from Woj, I believe, Friday. Mm-hmm. Then Grange added up or added onto it Saturday. And then it felt like something was happening yesterday. But I think this is just Raptors Twitter, very excitable. Mm-hmm. But you know, this is coming to a head, I think, soon.
Can you imagine Raptors Twitter if this happens?
Oh, it'll be,
oh my God,
uncontrollable. We got Vivek Jacob on later, and so we're going to ask him about this, obviously.
Big V.
But I also wonder if there's a possibility that the Raptors are quote unquote lurking in that they maybe are the third team involved in a trade that sends them elsewhere. Like, I think they could maybe take advantage of this opportunity to add to the team, because clearly they have to make a deal to get to that next level. Like, you can depend on internal development with Scotty Barnes, but also the aging parts of the roster will continue to age, and I'm not sure it'll all align without a player added to the mix. So if they can use this opportunity to benefit their team, and, you know, you obviously do it, but I think there's, you know, that trust in Masai, trust in Bobby. I think that's one of the things you saw on Twitter all weekend, where it's just like, they're going to make the right move. Don't worry. I mean, you're allowed to have an opinion.
Track record.
If you're a Raptors fan, you're allowed to have opinion. It's not just like they're going to be right with what they do. And that bothers me so much, because it's so lazy, right?
Yes.
It's so lazy.
Just
saying,
trust them if they draft this guy, he's going to hit.
Yeah, if they don't get Kevin Durant, it's probably the best thing for the Raptors organization,
and
because Bobby
him,
and
then
Masai said so. But if they got him, that's just a lazy way of looking at things. These two guys can be right, and they can be wrong with either their pursuit or non-pursuit of this player. But I do trust them to be in on what's happening and to make a positive move for the organization, whether that is getting Kevin Durant, whether that's passing up on the opportunity because it might involve something that you just can't stomach, or it means being the third team involved in helping facilitate a trade that could add a player. So
think about it that way. I like that.
We'll see. Well, we'll throw it at Big V, or Vivek Jacob, as we call him, Big V. Yeah, it's fascinating. Fascinating when the Raptors are involved in a deal like this, because this is how you believe that they're going to make that move. Free agency, not going to happen. They're not going to draft that player because they've already had their chance to draft as high as they're going to draft with Scottie Barnes,
and they got it.
So you need to do it again. You need to get one more big fish, and it seems like the trade market is really the only way to do it.
Keep your texts coming at 590-590. The KD stuff is obviously going to be a conversation piece all day. Here's one. Hey, Alyssa, you're right about the Raptors culture, but I think one of the main reasons why Masai builds from within and develops the young players the way the Raptors do is for exactly a scenario like this. Build the pieces that's competitive, but also be ready to pounce when a superstar becomes available. I haven't been a KD fan at all, but I'm all in on him coming to the Raptors. I'll turn into his biggest fan, provided we don't give up on Scotty.
I think you nailed it. I think the Raptors have done... Not that you're waiting to, not that history has to repeat itself. You have to do Kawhi again, but you have to build your team to put yourself in a position to take advantage of a situation. This scenario has presented itself, perhaps, and the Raptors have as good of a landing spot as any in terms of a situation where Kevin Durant can walk in and be highly competitive immediately, and to not have baggage like Kyrie Irving at his side. He'll have a winning culture if he comes to Toronto.
One other text. This might be worse than the Doug Gilmore trade. He's 35 years old. He'll make $53 million, but he's 37 years old in year 2025. Also,
it's all relative.
Accurate
the points. The money is relative.
We have two different sides of the text line, and that's going to be Raptors Twitter. We're either going to be like, do this, because this is going to be a historical move for this franchise, and in 2 years when you win a championship, we'll all be laughing. And then you have the other side of it that's like, this guy is old and he's on his decline and he's going to make way too much money and you're going to lose too much.
Or that next move, that next opportunity that presents itself that you wish you could have been in on, you can't be in on because you've already spent all those first round picks. Like, I think the Raptors are waiting for a scenario like this where they can make a big move. If it is Durant, then it's not the next opportunity or the next opportunity after that. And
like,
maybe
who's like him that's going to become available? I mean, there's
not
the
like
rumors
him.
That if LeBron and his, if his, you know, his son gets drafted one day, which doesn't look likely lately.
No,
he's slipping down. That he'll go to that team to play with his son for 1 year. It's like,
I don't think Masai's playing that.
Yeah,
game.
I don't think that's a Raptors card in the future.
What if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander wants to come home, mm-hmm. or Jamal Murray wants mm-hmm. to come, or
and
something
you've
given like
up
that?
All that availability,
and then all of a sudden you have nothing to offer to that to get that expiring.
Giannis.
Contract.
Giannis has been someone.
Well, that ship has sailed a little bit.
I don't know. There's still people still think that Giannis one day will come to the Toronto Raptors,
and maybe he might. But if you go out and get Kevin Durant,
that chance.
You can't. You've given up on future chances. Mm-hmm. So it is important for that reason, to nail this deal, to be right about this deal, because once you trade all those draft picks, you got to wait till they replenish themselves, and that takes a little while.
God, it would be great, exciting content to say the least, which sometimes you need in the summer. So
and you need it all year too. I mean, it would be as exciting a regular season and potentially mm-hmm. the postseason as any if KD was here.
Imagine Will Liu and Alex Wong on the Raptors show.
The show will just be
top in the world, going up the rankings.
It's already up there, I think.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Before we take a break, I just wanted to take a moment to give our condolences to Mark Budzinski, first base coach for the Toronto Blue Jays, and his entire family. On the weekend, they tragically lost their eldest daughter, Julia, in an accident. I know the loss is felt by everybody in the baseball world and the sporting community as a whole. You saw that the world coming together for that. We're sending our love, our thoughts, and prayers to Mark, his wife Monica, and their children Josh and Lily throughout this time.
Yeah, I mean, on-field difficulties pale in comparison. Of course, what happened to the Blue Jays family over the weekend. Can't imagine what they're going through. Can't imagine what the team went through. Very, very difficult scenario, obviously. And as you mentioned, thoughts and prayers to the family.
Let's take a break. Up next is the A-List.
The smartest takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590.
590.
The Fan.
Morning show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Justin Cuthbert and Ailish this morning. Happy July 4th to those of you south of the border. I had spent many July 4ths.
I was going to ask you that, actually.
I will say, I love Canada. I am very proud to be Canadian. But Americans know how to celebrate July 4th, and I have experienced it firsthand. I think I might be biased because I went to a school that knew how to have fun, mm-hmm. and I spent many July 4ths.
Now, would you go back for the weekend?
I would go back. I would go visit my American friends for the weekend. I wouldn't think I'd go back to college at this point.
No. I mean, when you were in college.
Oh, yeah.
You'd go back specifically for the July 4th weekend?
I would.
Yeah. I mean, that's the
move. You got it. They know how to celebrate their country. They are quite proud of being American.
Yeah. Yes, they are.
To say the least.
Yeah.
One of the best things about July 4th, however, is leading our A-List.
Now it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
It's the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest.
My favorite.
The best day in the alternatives. Yum, yum, yum. Yum, yum, baby. In the alternative sports world. Joey Chestnut, baby. He's back. He's looking for another new record. We'll get into that. Actually, there's lines for that in the Wake and Rake. I have done copious amounts of research this weekend. Like, I spent an embarrassing amount of time looking at Nathan's Hot Dog lines, Nathan's Hot Dog underdogs, the women's bracket. I have all of the knowledge. Stay tuned for the Wake and Rake.
Okay.
but Joey Chestnut is a huge Tom Brady fan. I mean, he actually
respects game, right?
He compared his like career to like the longevity of Tom Brady. We have a clip about what goes We have a clip about what goes into today's hot dog eating competition. I'll play that first now, Josh.
Tonight we a normal dinner, actually some salmon, a little bit of salad, but Saturday, Sunday we pretty much cleanse almost all liquid diet, lemon juice, water. And it's come Monday, 4th of July, I'm going to go into the contest hungry, loose, happy. And we're going to be eating back on the big stage in front of this will be the first year since COVID that we're back on the big stage, and there'll be 30,000 people there.
So I was actually surprised that for 2 days he just has like a liquid diet. Like I thought that you would, like your stomach shrinks, right? Like you have to, I thought you had to eat something. No wonder I lost the Looney Dogs race. It's because I didn't do that for 2 days. Okay. I didn't have lemon juice and a liquid diet. I was eating like a normal human. Even before my Looney Dogs experience, I was like, well, I should have lunch. Like lunch at like noon, and then I went to the game and started pounding Looney Dogs at 7. Clearly I don't have the Joey Chestnut book of Nathan's hot dog protocol, but that's what he does leading up to today. He hasn't eaten in 2 days.
I mean, I don't know if I'm the biggest sports science person in the world, but that it extends to hot dog eating competitions, that's a bridge too far. That's a bridge too far for me. But I guess there is a secret to success and longevity like Tom Brady. Tom Brady like longevity from Joey Chestnut. I guess he has to be doing something right, and I guess that's cleansing the few days before. Yeah. That's tough, though. I mean, you just talked about how great 4th of July weekend is, and I guess he gets to eat his hot dogs off the grill. I don't think they're probably grilled.
No, they're definitely boiled.
They're probably boiled. He does get his selection, but, you know, the first few days on a holiday weekend, he's just confined to lemon juice is poor Joey.
Yeah, not even like vodka lemon juice. Like
I don't think that would help him in the competition. Not part of the TB12 method for hot dog eating.
Speaking of TB12, so he's in an interview that we just played a clip from. And he's asked if he's willing to do a TB12 food showdown against Tom Brady. And he's like, you know what? I would do it. I don't think he can out-eat me in anything, including avocado ice cream, which sounds disgusting. So kind of challenged Tom Brady to an eating competition somewhere down the road once he's recovered from this. Also, there was part of that clip where he talks about what happens after, and I would not put that on our listeners. It was disturbing, to say the least. So he's eaten an average of 1,200 hot dogs a year for the last 16 years. And there's obviously, you've seen those studies that one hot dog can shave 36 minutes off your life. God. I don't want to do the math, but he's lost a lot of years.
Yeah.
He also holds the record for eating Twinkies, pastrami sandwiches, ramen noodle cups, gumbo, mutton sandwiches, pierogies, tamales, boysenberry pie, shrimp cocktail, and many more. Claimed the greatest eater in history.
As much as Joey Chestnut is like desperate to put his name alongside Tom Brady's, I don't think Tom Brady's going to bite on this anytime soon. I guess no pun intended there.
That was good.
That's great for him. You know, the life being shaved off every competition is a little bit disturbing and will be disturbing when everyone's watching it later today.
Stay tuned.
But I expect him to be, you know, WWE like holding championship belts up again, because this is what Joey Chestnut does.
I think he's minus 5,000.
Really?
Win. Yeah, of course.
It would be nice if a new contender could emerge.
There's no chance.
Knock this guy off his pedestal.
The last thing about Joey Chestnut, he holds the world record for eating fast food hamburgers. He ate 103 Crystal Burgers. Not sure that brand, but that means, according to the study, he lost more than 12 hours of his life. But this study says that there are some foods that can add minutes to your life, including candy. Helps you gain a minute or two. So, I mean, the study is a legitimate study. It also says that you can gain up to 33 minutes by eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So today, everybody, indulge and add some time to your life, because there's apparently a way. All right. Next, you live in a house, right?
I do.
So this might have happened to you. Have you ever had a package delivered that wasn't for you?
Not in a house, but that's happened many times in condo life for me.
Oh, it hasn't for me. They're very accurate.
You got a good staff on hand.
They're not messing around. All right. But a Denver, Colorado couple received a package that was not for them Monday night when the Stanley Cup was delivered to their home in the Hilltop neighborhood. Kit and his husband, Dimitri, are neighbors to Gabriel Landeskog. Well, like no flex there. And they briefly received the cup at their front door because a large tree confused the cup's keepers with their address. The keepers of the cup allowed the couple to spend some moments with the cup, take a photo in the case, touch the trophy, and then they delivered it to the appropriate house. Quote, they were gentlemen. They were very eager to share the experience with us. I had no idea that I would find it so fascinating. I was just happy to have the Stanley Cup in our driveway. And then Philip Pritchard, you know, the Hockey Hall of Fame's keeper of the cup, goes, mm-hmm. We stopped there. We really couldn't see the number of the house. So I said, we'll just go up and knock. What's the worst thing they can say? Hey, who are you guys? Sure enough, I knock. Hey, who are you guys? I don't know if there's a better thing to ever be delivered accidentally and to get the Stanley Cup on your doorstep a little Monday night. You got your doorbell cam. You know, who's this guy? You go down to the Stanley Cup. I just thought it was quite the stroke of good fortune.
The unmistakable Phil Pritchard. I was going to say,
that guy is a legend.
I thought he was mailing it in. Like, I thought it was literally mailed to the house. I'm like, why?
What
is the keeper of the cup?
Truck?
A week after the Stanley Cup was awarded, that he's taken a week off? Is that that's what's happening here? But I mean, I guess they went to the wrong house, knock on the door. It seems kind of intentional. Like,
no way.
Let's make a little content here with a neighbor.
I think they got enough content. This weekend, I saw more than 3 or 4 videos shared of this cup being absolutely destroyed.
Yeah, they are.
Like, it is going to be in shambles the next time you see it publicly. The parade, they had some issues. Then there's that nightclub video.
I think Curtis McDermott, I think.
4 a.m.
That was ridiculous.
He's lifting it over his head. He falls backwards. Like, and the keeper of the cup has to be around for all this. Like, that job, I actually want to interview him one day because I don't think it's enjoyable. Like, you're babysitting these rowdy guys that are, like, what happens? Okay, so there's that one video of, I forget who was in bed with the cup.
EJ, Eric Johnson.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Like, what is the keeper of the cup outside the door? Like, what if he takes it somewhere? Like, you have to always know where the cup is.
He puts like a little tape on the door, like a grade 8 trip.
An air tag in it.
Maybe.
Actually, that'd be kind of smart. But like, you need to be knowing where the cup is at all time, protecting it. The guy has it in his room. Like,
maybe there's like 12-hour windows that are doled out. Like, okay, it's the responsibility of
Eric
Johnson
for the next
12 hours.
They have
hours.
Not let go of the cup since they won.
No, I think you just got to be around. I actually don't, like, I think it's an unbelievable job because you get to, you write the most amazing book ever.
True.
When you're done with this.
Oh, I can't wait to.
And that's selling off, or that's flying off the shelves. But I think it's hard work for 2 weeks after, I think.
But all summer you go with the cup too. It's not just 2 weeks. You go on you go on the tour. You're going.
That's not so bad though.
Yeah,
a little bit more
that's the fun part. Okay, so you get to go to like established events where people have put some thought and time into their day with the cup. But the week after is just it's a disaster.
Chaos, definite chaos for sure. But I mean, if you're taking the time off to show up at someone's doorstep and let them take photos and have a laugh, like it can't be too stressful,
right? Yeah, that one was probably nice. You get to make someone's day. But the amount of times that I've seen videos this weekend of multiple people denting it. But I did see, I think, whose baby was it? Someone has a...
The tougher job is repairing the Stanley Cup over and over and over again.
And how do you just buff that out?
It's probably a daily process.
100%. He's got to know like how to buff out the bottom of that cup every single day. Because you're not presenting it the next morning
with dents. I don't think our guy Phil's buffing it out.
He's got someone on call.
I think he's got someone.
Well, yes.
Someone on standby.
I wish that we could share, like, there's so many videos, and I'm looking for A-list content. I'm like, I wish I could play this, but, like, it's a video. Like, someone in the parade didn't know who a player was.
Bowen Byram,
Bowen
right?
Byram?
It was a police officer.
A police officer, and the video clip's so funny because he's, like, talking to fans, and he's walking the parade, and the police officer's like, you gotta be out here. And he's like, I literally play on the team, buddy. And then, you know, the cop was a bit embarrassed. But, like, yeah, if you haven't been able to follow what the Avs are doing at the Cups, spend some time. It's good laughs. And you know what? I don't blame them. They're having a hell of a time. I saw them bench pressing the cup in a parking lot.
Curtis McDermott maybe should be involved in that a little bit. That Stanley Cup literally took him off his feet. I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often, by the way.
It looked like they were super surprised when they first won it, when they lifted it. Like, wow, this is heavy.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's heavier at 4 a.m. after a couple of beers.
100%.
And a little slippery. All right. I hope that the Toronto Blue Jays get a chance to hoist a trophy similarly. Seems like they're a little far away in terms of what they need at the trade deadline. Pitching, 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 pitching. We're going to talk to Jeff Blair after the break about that 8-game homestand. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.